Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, sponsored by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Monday morning. Talking all things Tennessee Titans, and to help us do that, we head to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Nick Suss, who does a great job for the Tennessean, covering all things Titans. Nick, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning. I'm well. How are y'all?
Doing great, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning. So, Nick, it's been a very busy couple of weeks here. The hiring of Mike Borgonzi as general manager, and now some more pieces under him starting to come into the fold over the weekend, including apparently Reggie McKenzie that Ian Rappaport put out there last night. But what do you make of the Borgonzi hire and now the pieces that have started to fall in place at assistant general manager and some scouting spots underneath it?
Yeah, I mean, it all falls into the question of, have the Titans gotten better in the last 3 weeks or so? And I tend to think the answer is yes. Obviously, there's no way of knowing until we actually see this all work out, because this comes down to a question of, these guys all say the Titans are going to be better because they believe they are the people who are going to get the right pieces in. And, well, everybody who gets these jobs is going to believe that. So, kind of have to take it at value of, they have the right philosophies and they have the right tactics and all these things, and I will buy it for now. I do tend to think that the strategies they are advocating for are the right kind of ones to set a team that went 3-14 back on track toward having a viable, strong enough roster. But obviously, there's a reason that people don't get second chances at being a GM all too often in the NFL. It's a hard job. And so we will see if these are the right people to do it. Obviously, no way of knowing until they've actually done it.
Nick, do you feel any differently about the GM role since they named Borgonzi, and you've heard Borgonzi talk about it, Mike Borgonzi talk about it, you know, than you did before, like in the interim there when Rand Carthon was fired? And I mean, I know that I was making a lot of assistant to the regional manager jokes here on this program, but do you feel like it's, I guess, more of a quote unquote real GM job than maybe you did before?
I mean, I can tell you frankly that I never cared. As long as somebody is making the decision, I've never really understood why people were so utterly fascinated by who defers to who. I do think this is more of a real GM job in the sense that if you're the one who is setting the agenda, then everything is going to filter through that agenda. So I do think that that is probably what matters most. And frankly, I've never really understood the concept of who the ties would be between. So I do think that it will just be Borgonzi making the decisions. And if there is something being vetoed, it's for, I can't come to the understanding of why that would happen. But yeah, I do think that he being Borgonzi, is going to be the one who is leading the way. And that's probably what matters more than somebody having the ability to veto that. I don't know. if it matters, then we will see. But I have a feeling this is much more of a January story than it will be a September story.
Nick, on that front, I mean, obviously you're talking about the number one overall pick. There's Shedeur Sanders, Cam Ward, you know, that are going to be available to the Titans. And then we'll see how they view those guys. As we sit here today on January 27th, how do you view what the plan at quarterback right now should be? Do you view it more through the eyes of maybe bringing in a veteran and going that route and, you know, trying to trade down and build up some other parts of your roster? Do you look at Shedeur Sanders or Cam Ward and say, you know, I think the Titans would be really, really good if they could draft one of these guys? How do you view quarterback as we sit here today?
Now, with the many, many caveats here that people do not pay me to make football decisions, I would say that I tend to lean towards draft the quarterback last. I am not a guy who believes in starting the rebuild with a quarterback unless it is as close to surefire situation as possible. And being a guy who will, admit I have not pored over hours and hours of tape. Just watching college football, I don't necessarily think these guys are surefire. I think they are intriguing prospects. I think both Ward and Sanders will develop into being solid NFL starters, but I don't necessarily believe that solid starter is the kind of guy you should pass up the opportunity to build an entire roster for. And if you believe that you can trade back once or twice in this first round and get five or six extra top 120 picks or something like that for the value, I'd be in favor of trading back twice. I'd be in favor of getting as many picks as you can and banking on the fact that next year there are probably going to be more quarterbacks going in the first round. That doesn't mean they'll be better. I'm not guaranteeing right now that the class will be better because we fall into that trap every year of, oh, trust me, next year's a great year. Next year's a great year. But I do think there's going to be more options to fall in love with next year. And the way I look at it, if you go with a bridge quarterback this year, let's just use the name Derek Carr to get nobody excited. If you go with Derek Carr and you stink, you trade it back, you have two first round picks, you can leverage that to go get who you want. If you go with Derek Carr and you're all right, you got two first round picks, use those the way the Lions did 2 years ago or the way other teams have of now you filled a little bit of holes on your roster and you can compete. I do think both of those are better options than try Shedeur Sanders or try Cam Ward and see how well they develop, and you're still probably 2 years away, than just, well, yeah, you got a quarterback, woohoo. I don't know if I'm making sense. It's early for me, but either way, I tend to think that having the more picks next year is the better idea.
No, that does make sense. You mentioned Derek Carr, who, and you're right, not very exciting. There's really not a name that would be terribly exciting. But if you had a pick of these, because I've thrown out Justin Fields and I'm taking a lot of crap for it, but if you had your pick of the, you know, the realistic options, who would it be?
If Stafford counts, Stafford is number one, but I don't think that's realistic. I like the idea of Carr because of his experience with Callahan. If there's somebody who I'm projecting ahead on, I think I would lean Zach Wilson just to let him compete with Levis and see what these two guys who have kind of struggled before could be. But I don't know. It's not necessarily the best feeling.
So you want Brian Callahan fired is what you're telling me.
there's not a good option here.
There is not.
But if I wrote this a couple of weeks ago, if people want to dig up the archives, I ranked the 27 best options from, who did I have last on the list? Dylan Gabriel, maybe, all the way up to if Stafford or Dak Prescott actually comes available, which I don't necessarily believe is an option anymore. But after you get past option four, nothing feels great.
No, there's no doubt about that. I do want to get your thoughts on where the Titans are right now from an edge rusher standpoint, because, mm-hmm. you know, Abdul Carter is going to be an option for them. We'll see, you know, how that all ends up shaking out. But you've got on the roster right now Arden Key, who has been, you know, a fine, serviceable piece, but has not, you know, been overly productive getting after the quarterback. Harold Landry has been productive, but is starting to get up there and coming off the major injury a couple years ago. So how do you view how much work needs to be done from the Titans as it relates to their pass rush this offseason?
Yeah, I will put it this way. I'm pretty sure I had a mock draft go up online this morning where I had the Titans trading back in the first round, using their first round pick on Mykel Williams and using their second round pick on JT Tuiomalau. I am totally fine if this team doubles up and drafts edge rushers back-to-back rounds to start the draft. I think it's that big of a need, and I think it's that important of a need in the NFL. I've probably joked this on your show before, but I think there are five things that matter in the NFL: throwing the football, protecting the guy who throws the football, catching the football from the guy who throws it, rushing the guy who throws the football, and defending the guy who throws the football. They can do the other four moderately okay at this point if you go get a veteran quarterback and veteran right tackle. I just don't think you're going to spend to get the kind of value you need at edge rusher. I think that if you're making a list of the 10 best edge rushers in the NFL, you're probably going to end up with a list of 8 guys who were picked in the top 10, and then T.J. Watt, who was a mid-first round pick, and Max Crosby, who they hit in the 3rd or 4th round. The value at that position almost always comes near the top of the draft. And if you want to start actually affecting quarterbacks in a way that the teams with the best pass rushes do, that's the easiest position to project. You look at the guy who's big and strong and fast and say, oh, yeah, he'll be able to rush the passer. So if it's Abdul Carter, or if it's Mykel Williams, or if it's James Pierce, or whoever it ends up being that you fall in love with as a pass rusher, go get him. Like, that's why guys like Myles Garrett and guys like Nick Bosa can actually compete to be the number one pick with quarterbacks, because it's not just a super important position, but it's usually a fairly easy position to look at and say, oh, yeah, that's going to translate.
Is there a right tackle that they can get and be? Is there a right tackle that they can get and be reasonable this year?
Yeah, I mean, it's all gradient. There are guys who are going to be improvements. I don't know if there's anybody who they're going to look at and say, oh, top 10 right tackle, this is perfectly solidified. But if the gauge is, can the right tackle position improve in 25 as much as the left tackle position improved in 24? I do think the answer is yes, whether it's try on somebody like Trent Brown or Jedrick Wills or whoever it is that will be higher money on the totem pole, or whether it's kind of Patrick McCary, is he a free agent from Baltimore? There are going to be some options there, and then you go in the 3rd or 4th round, draft a developmental project. If you can get a draft pick back, kind of compete your way between veteran and young guy, I do think that's viable. It's not going to be a perfect fix, because teams with multiple holes don't get 5 top 5 picks to do it. But if you're prioritizing between edge rush and right tackle, I'll probably get excoriated for it. I still prioritize the edge rush.
I think I'm with you. Nick, great stuff, man. Really appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, thanks, Phil.
Absolutely. Nick Suss from the Tennessean does an outstanding job covering the Tennessee Titans. We'll react to what Nick had to say. Coming up next, Vanderbilt takes down Kentucky over the weekend. Tennessee loses in a rock fight at Auburn. We'll get to that later this hour as well. Corey Curtis will be at 8 o'clock. All that coming up. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Nashville's best deal this week, Single Tree Barbecue in Murfreesboro. Single Tree Barbecue, a local veteran-owned and operated business, only serving world-class barbecue with the perfect combinations of sides and desserts. Get half off a $25 gift card now while supplies last at thegamenashville.com/deals. Appreciate Nick Suss for being with us in the last segment. Nick Suss, pretty big believer in edge rusher being a massive, massive need and of massive importance for the Titans this offseason. Said he wouldn't mind it if they went back-to-back, round one, round two, with edge rusher. What do you think of that?
Well, and it's a very good point by him in terms of that position and the correlation between picking that position high and success, which is it's not like that at every position, but it's a very good point. It does seem like it's a pretty good hit rate on, you know, like some guys. I mean, like Trevon Walker has not been number one pick caliber player, but of course that's the Jacksonville Jaguars. But for the most part, it seems like, and this would be something worth going back through the last few drafts, 10 drafts or whatever, but those guys who go high at that position – at least turn out to be like Aiden Hutchinson. I actually didn't think he'd be as good as he's been in the NFL. Obviously, Parsons is just, I mean, he's insanely good.
Yep.
And Abdul Carter looks like a dude, man. He looks like a dude for sure. You know, I still think that James Pierce, even though he's kind of mocked a lot of people around high teens, 20 or so, I still think that guy has a lot of juice, and he's going to be a good player in the NFL. So, no, I'm with him. I mean, you you help yourself so much when you have guys like that. And if you have multiple guys, if you can force teams to help or to have to think about helping on both sides of the offensive line, it's just such an advantage, and it helps your secondary so much. I mean, they're needy in so many spots. But I'm also – I mean, I don't know if he's getting excoriated for it, but it might have been a little dismissive of right tackle. I mean, I don't think that they moderately well protect the quarterback. I would disagree with Nick on that. I don't think they do that moderately well. I think they do that terribly.
I would agree with that. I also would agree that if you're looking for improvement at right tackle next year, I think that it shouldn't be that difficult to find. Like you should be able to go out in free agency. And I realize that there's not going to be a bevy of talent at right tackle in free agency because it just doesn't happen much in the NFL. But, like, improvement over Nicholas Petit-Frere and substantial improvement over Nicholas Petit-Frere, you would hope they would be able to find that this offseason.
Yeah. Yes.
If not.
But it's kind of like –
we got a big problem next year.
Right. But that's kind of like the discussion about, like, Levis, right? It's like, well, he's way better than he was at the beginning. Like,
right.
Like, can you get a good player? Good-ish player?
Yeah.
You know? You could be significantly better than him and still be pretty bad.
I would agree. But then that is the question. Like, can you get a legitimately good player? I don't know the answer to that. Like, is there a plug-and-play right tackle that you can find in this draft that you're obviously not going to pick at number one overall that you can find that can be a good player for you next year? I don't know.
And is there any internal, because I've heard Trevor Maddich say this on Stilley's show, any internal discussion about, yeah, you know what? Latham actually would be better at right tackle, so let's spend a significant choice on a left tackle.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine if the Titans in April, they say, hey, we've got a trade to announce. Tennessee Titans have traded back to 7. And with that pick at number 7, they're taking a left tackle.
That'd be very high to take any tackle in the draft.
I know.
Now, if they trade back and they get a bunch of picks and they get another second or something and they take someone
I would assume.
That would be good,
yeah.
Potentially. But, yes, if that were the case.
Titans fans would be like, oh, no. Here we go again.
It does get boring drafting linemen all the time.
It does. Let's head back to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in Adam in Portland. Adam, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
You guys are freaking me out. Like, I don't.
Sorry.
I just hope nobody's listening when you go, I think we should get a defensive end. He's going to be a great player. We can't score over 30. We scored over 30 like 3 times in 4 years. Insane. And we're going to talk about spending the top pick on a DN. I'm not saying you're the only person saying it, dude, and I know y'all know what you're talking about, but my God. Like, if we can't find somebody who can help us score points, what are we doing? Like, it has to be the – if you're going to do that, you have to have the best free agency period in the history of the Titans in order to do that. And I don't trust anybody on this team personnel-wise to be able to do that. So you got to draft Hunter or Sanders or one of these dudes who could score points. If not, then it's going to be – same old crap. So, yeah, get an awesome defensive end and bring him in here for a team who can't score. And hopefully we'll beat people 9-6. I mean, I don't know what else to say, dude.
Thanks for the call, Adam. Adam, not a huge fan of the idea of edge rusher.
I mean, Adam, your team went 3-14. So if you think they're going to fix everything this offseason, you know, it's – I mean, I understand what you're saying in general. You know, and we've talked about it. It's like, well, gosh, sucking is one thing. Sucking and not scoring is a worse thing. But if you take the best football player, and if Abdul Carter is that level of star, then you do that. You could score points with pretty good quarterbacking, pretty good offensive line play. You've got a good back. You got decent. You know, you add a receiver. I mean, you could all of a sudden actually score some points.
I mean,
like the idea of like, well, this team is so bad offensively, you have to take the quarterback. Again, that's how the bad franchises stay bad.
I mean, Suss brought up an idea at quarterback that I'll admit I had not spent a ton of time thinking about. The Zach Wilson-Will Levis combo at camp could be electric.
Oh, my gosh. What an absolute battle that would be, you know? I mean,
that's the first time that I've thought about that combo.
Rocky against Drago. My goodness.
And, you know, I thought I really wanted the Deion Sanders as coach versus PK in the press conference every week. I think I might want the Zach Wilson, Will Levis combo at quarterback even more. It'd be awesome.
I mean, who would win? Who knows? It would be back and forth. I'm sure it would be close.
Until the bars around here. Watch out. Zach Wilson's in town. He's looking for some older women.
Oh, boy. You had to say it.
It's pretty well documented.
Well, it is.
615.
We have people of all ages here in Nashville.
1025. Our phone number. We'll continue to take your thoughts on the Titans. The Rob rant coming up at 745. Corey Curtis will be with us at 8 o'clock. Vanderbilt takes down Kentucky for a second huge win for them in the span of a week. And the Vols lose a tough one on the road in Auburn. We'll get into that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Robbie and Rex Road, sponsored by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit FirstHorizon.com/get it all. Let's head back to our 102.5, the game phone line. Welcome in Mike to the program. Mike, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, good morning, guys. I appreciate you taking my call. I just wanted to disagree a little bit with that caller, Adam, I think his name was, who was kind of giving y'all a hard time about he wanted to draft Shadur or Travis Hunter. You know, we've got so many holes. We need to build this team from the trenches out. We don't have an offensive line that can keep a quarterback upright long enough to stay in the pocket or not get sacked before we get a guy that becomes open, unless they're throwing, like, just passes out in the flat or they're handing the ball off, and even then you can't get a hole to let Tony Pollard run through it. So you got to get offensive line short up. I'm totally cool with taking Abdul Carter on defensive end because you got to do the same thing on the other side of the ball. If you can't put pressure on the quarterback, then you got all the time in the world to shred up the secondary. So I'm cool with Abdul Carter, and I'm cool with trading the pick to maybe get some more picks. But Shadur Sanders and Travis Hunter, neither one of those guys are the answer for us. I appreciate you.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate the call. So, Mike, a little bit of that Philadelphia Eagles football, big boy football, building up on the line, getting after the quarterback. That's the way to go.
Yeah, I generally agree with Mike. I mean, but the only thing I disagree with is, like, you need great players. You know, I think I like that as a philosophy. So I'm
as many of them as possible.
So, like, the idea that you just dismiss Hunter, like, if you think he's a great player at his position, that's, you know, you need those guys too. You need skill guys too.
Yep.
But I mean, it's always a line of scrimmage game. And yes, if you think Abdul Carter is a great player, you have a chance to get him. Yeah, you need to score, but get a great player and keep building. Again, there's just a lot of work to do with this team. So good call, Mike. But you're cutting into my very rare basketball segment. Robbie's letting me have a basketball segment, for crying out loud.
I am. Let's start with Vanderbilt. So Vanderbilt, 74-69 winner against Kentucky over the weekend. A week after, they took down Tennessee at home as well. So, Joe, back-to-back huge wins for Vanderbilt against Tennessee and Kentucky at home. Back-to-back court stormings as well. So you've got that to contend with. There's this video going around and picture going around, like Kansas Story Lee.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, please, let's try not. Let's use some of this money for NIL.
Yeah.
And we can have better teams.
It was worth a shot.
Did not work.
It was worth
a shot.
The
court was stormed. But how about the job that Mark Byington is doing with the Vanderbilt Commodores? That's two massive wins for that program, the most recent being against the old Kentucky Wildcats.
Yeah, huge wins. I mean, the fact that you go back-to-back weekends, beat Tennessee and Kentucky, and that with in both cases, you know, great atmospheres, but also tons of the other, you know, as always, Kentucky travels here. Tennessee always, you know, puts a lot of orange in there to win both those games. Just enormous for him. You want to talk about a job, and you mentioned Candace. And that was pretty funny. And trust me, you know, Candace Lee, it was worth a shot, you know, because they just got hit with 500K. It's their third one. They got they go up. So I think it's 800K now. But believe me, she'll, you know, it's like worth a shot, but it's not like the end of the world.
They're gonna, like, be standing arm in arm in the next game, like, please do not rush the court.
That's the thing. It's like, I don't know. I guess, well, Auburn does come. Auburn comes. Yeah. What if they're number one and they beat them? My goodness, watch out. But talk about the job, to take it a little bit bigger picture real quick. I mean, Candace Lee hired Byington, but also she hired Shea Ralph, who has someone who I think is going to be National Player of the Year, Michaela Blakes. Like, she's going to be National Player of the Year before her career is done at Vanderbilt. Like, she's that good. They just won at Bama yesterday. So those two programs are – those look like fantastic hires. It's early still for Byington. I think with Ralph, we see. I mean, she is – like, they're going to be, like, a good team that can win NCAA tournament games this year. And they have this new basketball facility over there now. Like, it's all looking great. So, and look, this Vanderbilt team is so much – I didn't think this team would be that good. It was totally from scratch. You know, some good guys that you brought in, but the fact that he was able to put a team together that seems to mesh so well and play so well together and be better than the sum of its parts is that's a good sign for the coaching.
Was Jelly Roll there on Saturday, or was he just there for Tennessee and Vanderbilt?
I don't know. I haven't seen any Jelly Roll videos.
I haven't either.
So maybe the Tennessee fans got mad at him enough that he's like, I'm just going to sit this one out.
Man, Vols fans were mad about that.
I mean, Kentucky fans would probably get mad at him too. They probably thought he was a Kentucky fan. Alabama football, Kentucky basketball. Yeah. I know Jelly Roll would never be a bandwagon like that.
Why would you do that? Speaking of the Vols, you were there for what I would describe as a rock fight between Tennessee and Auburn. I was here doing the Predators and the Ducks in studio and had the Tennessee-Auburn game up. I will say, I've watched Tennessee. I saw them hit a buzzer beater against, I think, Illinois earlier in the year. I was watching that game, so that was fun. I watched Tennessee and Florida, and then I watched Tennessee and Auburn. Not very good shooting luck when I've been watching the Tennessee Vols so far this year.
Yeah,
tell your thoughts.
I know, and I hate it because then you rip college basketball and say college basketball sucks and the NBA is much better and all this stuff. And look, I mean, it's a higher level of play, no doubt. It's not always like this, man. Like, you got to actually watch Michelle Perry's squad, you know? They're going to, like, often give up 90 and score 90 and, you know, get into games.
Yeah, but
like
I have to
that.
Listen to her talk about it enough. So
the weird thing about, the Tennessee-Auburn thing is, yes, it was the other night, you basically got to the point. It was a great atmosphere and all that stuff, and it was a great game in terms of it was very competitive, super
came down the end.
Intense, came down the end. But it did get to the point where, like, late in the first half, you're just like, they're just going to all miss their shots.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of them were contested and good defense, but there were plenty of shots that – I mean, Auburn is one of the best shooting teams in the country. Tennessee, best three-point defense in the country, but it was ugly. But last year, these two teams played in Knoxville, and it was 92-84.
Yep.
And so, Jahni Broome dominated that game. Dalton Knecht went nuts. I think he scored like 20 straight or something, like 39. So, very different game. Would have been huge for the Vols. I mean, you get that win, and your resume is like, you know, I mean, you are like, when it comes down to picking one seeds, your resume is awfully strong. Tough loss for them, you know. And there was some officiating stuff, but I mean, I think that both teams got hosed. I think that was a Broome foul that with the walk on Akpara, yep. Which of course Rick Barnes spiking his drink in that moment. But you know, just a tough loss for the Vols because it would have been a steal. Because I think Auburn has a higher ceiling than Tennessee. I think Auburn's the best team. They have depth. They have everything you need to be great. And Jahni Broome was not healthy, and he's still basically dominated the game. And Tennessee, I worry about Zakai Ziegler. He's such a great player. He's incredible, man. And they put everything on his shoulders. He played like 39 minutes and 33 seconds the other night. He can't take him out of a game. And they're in this league where every night's huge. They got Kentucky coming in tomorrow.
Yep.
And it's a good team. But their lack of depth, I think, it concerns me about where things are going to go here by the time you get to March.
I would agree. I think there's way too much on Ziegler. And look, I love Zakai Ziegler. I don't know that, like, Zakai Ziegler being your go-to scoring option when you need a bucket is the best plan. Like, I mean, they drew up the play for him the other night. He took the shot at the game winner three, missed it. I mean, I understand he's been around a while. He's a great player. But, like, they don't have Dalton Knecht walking through the door. Like, I know some people earlier in the year were trying to draw parallels between Chaz Lanier and Dalton Kincaid. And Lanier is a good shooter, but they are not the same player. Not close.
No, they're basically the same role, which is like it's your top bucket getter, right? So when you run offense, usually you're running it for Lanier. And obviously last year. But last year what they started to do was, you know what, just give it to Dalton and get the hell out of the way. And that's not Chaz Lanier. He's a catch-and-shoot guy. And I think he's getting a little bit bumped and getting learning what the SEC is about, and it's a different level for him. And I think they're a little frustrated with him too. He needs to be tougher, frankly. So he's – I mean, look, he was leading the country in three-point shooting. He's still, like, right up there. But, yeah, they need someone else. They need, like, Darlingstone, DeBar, somebody else to hit some. They need Mayshak also, who, by the way, is, again, like Mayshak and Ziegler, I don't know that I've seen two players defensively in college basketball better than those two. They're incredible. But Mayshak, when you come off, when you're on the wing and you get the ball swung to you and you're all alone, like at this point in your career, you have to shoot it, man.
Yep.
You have to. And he's not. And so you know, and I just don't know if that's going to change. But they just seem light a scorer at this point, unless they can find someone else.
So Vanderbilt, kind of rounding this whole discussion up. We know Tennessee's going to be in the tournament. Where they end up seeding wise, we'll see. Vanderbilt, how are we feeling about the rest of their journey through the SEC, the prospects of being a tournament team, and how dangerous they could be come tournament time?
Well, you know, I'm doing my bracket as we speak. The bracket will come out tomorrow on The Athletic. And I have Vanderbilt now, let me look, as my overall 33rd seed in the tournament, which in other words, I have them as a 9, but almost as an 8 at this point. Some Vanderbilt fans would say, wait a minute, just beat Tennessee, just beat Kentucky. And you know what? It's a fair point to make. They could be higher than that. Right now, they're in pretty good shape. Now, this league can
chew you up, spit you out, man.
Yep. Yeah. So you got to make sure you win like the games. And they won at LSU. They beat soccer. So you got to make sure you win the games, those rare games where you're clearly the better team. You have to. I still think they're going to have to steal a couple games that we wouldn't expect them to win to make sure that they're safe. But right now, yeah, those wins are going to look really good when the committee convenes in a few weeks.
615-737-1025, our phone number. The Rob Rant coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game.
Don't make me angry.
Sometimes you have to tell someone to pound sand.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
This is The Rob Rant.
Now
on Robbie and Rex Road.
Been so effective, but again, Juergens is in there, really short snap there. Nice job by Hurts picking it up, but none you can do there.
I think Washington jumped. Frankie Louvu jumped over both lines.
Yeah.
That was like Air Jordan.
It is that time of the day. Time for the Rob Rant here on the program. We'll take your thoughts, 615-737-1025. Joe, a lot of watching football that took place yesterday. Look, I was as invested as anybody in the Kansas City-Buffalo game. I wanted Buffalo to win. I'm tired of watching Kansas City win football games. Having said that, when the game was over, like I wasn't like legitimately mad or upset. It's just like, oh, well, that stinks. Buffalo lost, and Kansas City's going back to the Super Bowl, and I really have no interest in the Super Bowl, so I guess that stinks too. There's really only one time yesterday where I was visibly angry and wanted to punch my television screen watching football being played yesterday, and it was this ridiculous back and forth in the second half of the NFC title game near the goal line when Philadelphia was lining up to do this stupid brotherly shove, tush-push, whatever you want to call it, and Washington kept jumping offside and flying over the top of the line. You had the officials getting on the microphone. If this behavior continues, we're going to award a touchdown for Philadelphia. So-and-so has been warned, and they're going to get an unsportsmanlike foul coming up. I'm like, the play where they eventually scored on the tush-push took about like 5 minutes of real time to execute because they couldn't get the snap off because Washington kept trying to time the jump and jump offside. It set football back 1,000 years yesterday. I thought that was the dumbest sequence I have ever seen. I don't know what you do about this stupid tush-push because it's all the rage now. It was just Philadelphia And now everybody else is doing it. Like, you know, the Packers do it where they don't even use Jordan Love. Like, they motion Tucker Kraft in, and he does it. Buffalo did it all game long yesterday with Josh Allen trying to run off the left guard, which apparently a nice scouting report by Kansas City because they stopped that a couple of times.
The left cheek doesn't work.
It doesn't work on that one, apparently. I don't know what you do about it. You know, a lot of people are really mad at it from Philadelphia's standpoint because, I mean, it does look like they're in an illegal formation every time because their two guards in the center like have their head directly across the neutral zone. So I don't know what you do about it. I just know that that debacle yesterday to eventually get to like a half an inch touchdown that they scored legitimately pissed me off. Like I was ready to throw something at my television by the time we got to the end of that tush push nonsense.
I think it's jump the shark. I think this might be the inflection point where it's like, you know what? Get rid of this crap. Does anybody remember the 2005 Notre Dame USC game?
Yes.
You do?
I do.
I'm very impressed.
I remember where I was watching.
I mean, that was a great game. That was the game that got Charlie, by almost beating USC, Charlie Weiss got, like, the biggest contract in college football, like, you know, because he was a genius.
Yes.
But it was an incredible game, and for anybody who doesn't remember, you know, Matt Leinart, USC was the top of the sport at that point. Matt Leinart got in, and Reggie Bush pushed him. And there was all this controversy about the Bush push, right? And I think about that, and I think about now what everybody is doing with this thing. And I think they need to just outlaw pushing, you being able to shove your – and I know then people will be like, well, what about like at the goal line, your back's in, you know, what, an offensive lineman can't smash in there and knock him in? I mean, I don't know. I mean, there's some nuance with this, but I'm with you. That was a great moment of like, okay, this is dumb. Now, I will defend Washington a little bit, Robbie, because they had the one play where he just – maybe they did it twice. But then Philly is trying to – like, why are you at the inch line trying to
draw him off?
Hard count him? Yeah. Like, just score. Just score.
Look, I'm not saying –
why are you hard counting them?
I wasn't, like, totally upset at Washington, but it's like – I mean, after about the third offside, I was just like, oh, my God, get this over with. And it took forever. Like, I
didn't know about the awarding the team.
I didn't either. Like, I've never heard of this. And yeah. The way that the official phrased it, like, if this behavior continues, it's like, shut up, dude. We're not here to talk about you and being some babysitter out there.
Giving them the business down there.
I'm with you. Like, hopefully this will create some sort of rule where you can just get rid of this thing. Because quite frankly, like, I don't really want to see this be like some league-wide sensation now of, all right, it's 4th and 1. Let's get this big dog pile in the middle of the field and see if you can sort through who got the first down and who didn't. It just doesn't sound fun to me.
Yeah. Well, and I do – I'm actually surprised that the play, as it's become so widespread, isn't resulting anymore. It's a dangerous play,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, I agree.
You know? And I know if it's, you know, football, you're going to have injuries and big hits and all that stuff, but, like, that – I think that, you know, it's an ugly, boring, dangerous play. And, yeah, I think we've seen enough of it, you know. I mean, and look, it's a great option for teams when they have the short yardage, you know, if you've got the right personnel.
Yeah,
I get why you want to do it. Like you said, like the Lions have gone with their tight end doing that, you know. I get it. And then you can do some other things off it, which has been kind of cool at times, a little jump pass or whatever, you know. But, yeah, I think this is something that has to really be looked at now.
I don't even really blame Philadelphia for doing it because, I mean, they've been – when you're allowed to do it, then why not take advantage of it? Like, you know, Jalen Hurts could squat like 600 pounds or whatever it is. So, like, I get it. You get him low, it's hard to bring him down. So, I don't blame Philadelphia for doing it. With the biggest game to this point in the year, you're in conference championship weekend. Like, how many tush pushes did Buffalo run yesterday? It was a lot.
Yeah.
They ran a lot of them. And then you get that debacle where, like, even you could sit, like, you could feel like Brady in the middle of it. And I know Brady has his faults calling games, but even he was just like, oh my, like, what are we doing? Like, what's going on here? Like, I would hope with the national audience, like, everybody locked into your product, that people in the NFL are talking today, like, yeah, we might need to do something about this tush push this offseason.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, I think it really needs to be discussed. So a texter says there's a rule that says you can't assist the runner, but it hasn't been called since like 1991. So there's still, like, you can't pull. That is definitely still enforced. But yeah, the pushing is okay, you know, and I'm just, but again, then it's like, then it gets into, I don't know that I want it taken away that, like, when a running back is struggling at the goal line, that, you know, you can't have offensive linemen come in and, you know what I mean? That's also hard to enforce sometimes. So a lot to talk about, but someone says, for all of us who love 3 yards in a pile of dust type football, we say just grow up. Well, again, I mean, I thought it was fun at first with this.
It'd be a lot more fun if it was 3 yards.
Yeah. You know, and it also, with the Eagles, it was Jason Kelce, too. Like, the Kelce and a Hurts combo, you know, hard to stop. But, yeah, that whole sequence was like, please stop. Please stop it.
I mean, it got to the point, you know, after about the third offside, where I was just like, you know what? Just keep jumping. I want to see if they actually do award them a touchdown. Like, is the official actually going to be like, all right, that's enough. Touchdown, Philadelphia.
Right. And, of course, in a 55-23 game, it doesn't end up mattering. But what if that's a close game and you have an awarded touchdown?
Yeah.
I mean, that's not good.
Unbelievable. 615-737-1025. Our phone number, Corey Curtis from News 2 will join us coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.